higher standards than rule following? I guess I set myself a pretty high standard for doing things actually for God and not for other reasons back in my teens and 20s. The minimum evidence of loyalty to God at our meeting was showing up every Sunday morning. If you missed a Sunday or two every couple of months, this was a clear sign that you were not committed to God. If you wanted to help out or speak up in meeting or be taken seriously at all there, you needed to show up at all 5 meetings a week with your carefully stifled infant children and your decently dressed, tidy teenagers. Now, it didn't escape my adolescent notice that some people were taking any and all absences from the rest of us so personally that one had to conclude that people clearly took poor attendance as a sign of being disloyal to them rather than to God, which is why they showed such pained disapproval. They took absences as a personal affront. And they took attendance in their heads and took their revenge on many. Snide comments, mock passive-aggressive concern, social status is getting slashed, reputation assassination. I increasingly had trouble showing up at meeting. For one thing, the men there had really done a number on my father, which made it hard to sit and be taught by people who demonstrated such a lack of love, tolerance, forgiveness, compassion, and certainly integrity. Then there was the division that we went through. For another thing, if my attendance suffered, or if I went to the movie theater to see Star Trek VI, I knew that though their words purported to express loving concern and worry, that really their tone of voice and treatment of me clearly showed wounded feelings of betrayal and disdain, dismissiveness, disgust, also a slight hint of triumph. They attended, I didn't, so they won. And they started shunning me and my meeting friends from other assemblies well in advance of any official sanction. By the time they gave me paperwork informing me of worldwide shunning, I'd been shunned for my entire 20s already. It wasn't a change. It wasn't like they'd been working with me, had tried everything, and had eventually consigned me to Satan for destruction of the flesh afterward. They'd thrown me under the bus at the first sign of me not being one of us and bided their time until they could get enough in their files to kick me out. And yes, they alluded to a literal file being kept on me. When I asked for the offending parody tract I'd written so that I could destroy it, it was very hurriedly tucked back inside a suit coat pocket to keep it from me so it could go right back in the file they kept on me. To this day, when I blog things, people often print them out and deliver them to people most likely to be angered by them, people who keep an outrage collection on all of us. I had been asked not to attend various youth group things right through my 20s. Some of my peers were forbidden to ride in my car, as I might well play rock and roll in there, or worse yet, talk about the Bible. That was something no young person was supposed to do without older people around to keep heresy at bay and tell us all the right answers. I was told this in just those words more than once. We needed to have old people around to tell us the right answers. I participated in a couple of informal Bible discussions anyway in my 20s, mostly when visiting brethren friends were here and wanted to do that. We were forbidden to do that in the meeting hall or at the home of anyone in meeting, my family and relatives included. I asked. And the local youth boycotted said Bible discussions as they'd been told to. Only friends visiting from assemblies from out of region attended and took part. Despite how sidelined I already was and my belief that the brethren lifestyle didn't work, I still somehow lived in terror of what the gathered saints would think of me, feared worsening my status somehow, worried about what they would do to me next. So I tried to attend, despite it ripping my conscience to shreds to do it. I walked in, feeling like I wore a crown of crap they'd given me, but I lived in anguish at the thought of anything worse happening. And of course, it eventually did. They eventually made it official and stripped me of the right to attend any meeting social functions anywhere on the planet, refusing to meet with me to discuss that or anything else ever since. It got to the point where my best brethren friends asked me if I'd mind not attending their wedding reception so their parents and uncles and aunts would be willing to attend. But back when I was trying to attend still, so I wouldn't lose my seat in that vicious game of ecclesiastical musical chairs, it made me realize that I was afraid to miss meetings because of the social consequences. That it wasn't really about God at all. There was a very clear pecking order, a social status system, just like in high school. There was an inner circle of cool kids, and there were people who were on the fringes. We all paid for us status by submitting to being socially punished for any and all missteps in Brethren practice, especially in the inner circle I'd been raised to aspire to, and I was feeling that. My father had been consigned to the fringes, and I was shoved out there too. We'd been judged to be oddballs who didn't get assembly living. There was no long-suffering attitude to people being different. All of this was what made me so tempted to unthinkingly do whatever the meeting folk wanted, whether they admitted wanting it or not, just so they'd not disrespect or socially punish me more. But my conscience had a problem with that. I realized that showing up Sunday for some Jesus-related reason, and showing up Sunday to avoid Mr. and Mrs. Jones's disapproval, were very different things. I was aware that it would be pretty hard to tell looking on what my reasons for showing up were, but that really didn't matter to me. I knew that God knew, and I was determined not to earn social status by fakery. I was determined not to alleviate the intense social pressure through pretend piety, and despite an awareness that the entire culture was one of competitive shows of piety, I felt it would be wrong to play that game anymore. I couldn't really do it eventually. It felt utterly unnatural to pretend things. So I woke up hundreds of Sunday mornings in my 20s, determined to go out to Sunday morning meeting and simply could not make myself go. Eventually, perhaps one out of every three meetings, I got afraid enough to show up, and so I did. There was an emotional and spiritual price to be paid each time I showed up, of course, but I paid it. A lot of it was about the fear of anyone being able to say I'd not been out for a whole month, so I made sure I dragged my bedraggled, wide-eyed self in there at least once or twice a month to keep my membership open as long as I could. I managed that for the last few years before they kicked me to the curb. Now, I don't think God has ever spoken to me in a voice. I do think, though, that occasionally whole thoughts in sentences have come into my head, and I think they were created in my head because I was trying to hear God. This one time, I'd been missing Sunday mornings in Ottawa quite a bit. I managed to convince myself that I was going to go out and that it was for God and not men, and I came walking in a bit late, a bit shaken by the wrestlings with myself over this matter. I looked around, getting no eye contact, and sat down. And I said to God in my heart, "I'm here for you. I hope it's okay that it's been weeks." And the sentence that formed in my head, perhaps helped along by him, was simply, "Don't even pretend you are here because of me." That rang true, and I started to suspect maybe he didn't even want me to attend there at all. It wasn't good. I felt like he didn't like me pretending my showing up was for any reason other than fear of getting kicked out of a place I had a tortured conscience about to begin with. The worse it got at my assembly, and the fewer people I could talk to who seemed to be aware of anything more Christ-related than the piety game of maintaining social status, and the more time passed, the less I could believe God wanted me there at all. He seemed completely disinterested in my showing up there, and just as disinterested in my finding a different church to go to. This is not how I was told God would behave, what to do. I had to go out. I have since come to believe that Christians are to love one another. I tend to think that connecting to one another is an important part of that. What I was doing didn't seem worth it. I was showing up at meeting just enough to not lose my membership. While there, I was pretending, as many others were, that I was the only one in the room as I worshipped. Then I was leaving after meeting was over without anyone letting me in to any kind of genuine conversation. After a while, it didn't seem Christian at all. It had nothing to do with Christ. There was certainly no love in it. But I showed up a couple of times a month despite God, even after I'd been kicked out. I tried to make human connections with the Christian people, thinking that human connections were less lofty a goal than anything more divine, but still worth doing. And I failed over and over again. It was all fake. I couldn't get anyone to say a word to me that I could believe. Nothing I said to them got any kind of a sincere response. And my standards for sincere were through the floor at this point in time. They just wanted me to move on by then, become an atheist or Baptist or whatever. There is something that Brethren people have said to me over and over again, right along with, just pretend there's no one else in the room, just you and God, that's what it's all about. Here's when I heard it. Sometimes I was frank with the mental attendance takers about having trouble showing up. And they said this, If I could choose the church of my choice to attend, I certainly wouldn't choose this one. There are so many other churches with nicer people, with better singing, better conversation, lovely music accompaniment, and all the rest. But God chose this one, and I honor that. I do not question His will for me. This place wouldn't be my first choice, I can tell you. But we feel the Lord's mind in our coming here, and so here we are. Division author Wim van Hofwegen said that to me after the first division and right before the next one he helmed several times, emphasizing just how odd it really was that he was associated with this group of people. He certainly didn't enjoy any of these people, he was broadly hinting, no more than I did. It was to be our sacrifice for God, and it wasn't easy. I mean, just look at them. We stood there together at the back of the meeting hall and looked at them. And I heard the same thing from so many others. They didn't really seem to like each other much. Weren't hanging out outside of meeting at all, really. Before the division, there'd been some people to choose from as to social things. But now, there were just these few people. They presented it as a noble sacrifice to go there, one they were obedient and wise to make. They were trying to connect with me briefly about how they couldn't connect to anyone either, but still felt they had to attend. It was the one place, after all. They were letting me know, with the most kindness I ever saw from them, that they weren't getting anything much out of being there either, but that they believed they had to show up for God and to be right, to keep meeting going, for swearing more fun church worship services in favor of the meeting grind. Because that's how a lot of people seem to view it. Friendship was fleeting and frivolous, and fun was downright bad, so there was inherent worth in sacrificing them for God. One lit candle, one shaft of sunlight shining through a stained glass window, one stirring chord on an organ, one anything that you felt Sunday morning, and you were off scriptural ground, pleasing self. And then clearly it wasn't about God anymore. No, it was about you. And you were a sensualist and perhaps an idolater. Look at the Catholics, kissing and bowing down and praying to the wooden statues and crosses. Pharisees, the lot of them. Well, rumor had it there might be a few Catholics in heaven one day. You never knew. As I've said, the assumption was that if you were happy about what you did Sunday or in general, God wasn't. More troublingly, the assumption was that if you killed happy, only then could God be happy. What kind of God were we worshiping anyway Sunday mornings? This concept of a God who is only pleased by our boredom and sacrifice is a ridiculous idea. But I had to get pretty grown up before I even started to figure out that this idea that one pleased God by displeasing oneself was a pretty dubious one.